I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Lindsay and Nick Dewald. Lindsay and Nick are the founders of City Flea, which sprang into action back in 2011. Currently, City Flea is occurring in Washington Park once a month. The next one's going to be August 17th. Mm-hmm. If folks would be interested in going down to City Flea, what can they expect?
When people are coming to the market, you can expect to see a wide range of various types of vendors. We have around 100 vendors at each market. We have people selling vintage clothing, found objects, antique furniture, cool rock posters, all kinds of things you can expect to see. We have a DJ who plays music. There's food trucks. So it really is just a good fun atmosphere.
What gave you the idea to start City Flea in Washington Park?
Nick, my husband and I, we used to live in New York City, in Brooklyn actually, and there was a flea market in Brooklyn that we both just kind of fell in love with. When we decided to move back to Cincinnati, we weren't quite ready to give up that kind of flea market urban culture. So we brainstormed, did a little bit of research, and decided to start our own. And once Washington Park was finished, it just seemed like the perfect venue. It was a great fit for us.
Well, that's wonderful. And Nick, I know you are an architect, and you currently also work for 3CDC, which is very instrumental in the whole transformation of the Over the Rhine area. But your flea market also is one more thing that's helping that whole area just have a facelift.
We are one of many things going on that are relatively new to the neighborhood and to the city. And I feel like we're finally, as a city, over that hump of the risk of all this momentum not amounting to something. Everybody seems to just be completely excited about what's going on in the city and very willing to participate in everything. And so every month, you know, we just are so grateful for the amount of people that come out to support all these local vendors.
Well, and people are getting used to going to Washington Park, aren't mm-hmm. they? Because there's events there, I think, almost every night.
Every night, yep.
You know, it's so interesting. I love flea markets. I love just the idea of browsing and looking. And mm-hmm. most of the time, I never purchase very much at all, but it's just the thrill of the hunt, I think. Why do you think others? Do you think that's the reason why so many people are, you said you guys fell in love with the flea market concept. Is that why? The chase?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's an opportunity to sort of be in a bustling environment where you don't exactly know what you're about to see. You know, people do most of their shopping in big box retail stores, and you know exactly what you're going to get when you walk in those doors. But with a flea market, or if it's Finley Market or Second Sundays on Main, for example, it's something different every time. And you don't know what each vendor is going to have each week. You don't know which vendor is going to be there. And so I think there's this inherent sense that people want that experience, and there's more and more opportunities to find that. And I think it's part of an overall move back to people wanting an urban lifestyle.
And Lindsay, I know you're very involved in the City Flea concept. Mm-hmm. And what kind of vendors do you look for in terms of the aesthetics that what you're trying to present there at the City Flea Market?
I think we want vendors who are doing something unique where it's easy for us and for our shoppers to see that they're creative. They've got creativity right off the bat. When you walk up to their booth, you can tell that something interesting is going on. You know, we like our vendors to present themselves in an interesting way.
If someone listening today would like to get in touch with you, learn more about how to become a vendor, how to participate in the City Flea Market, what's your contact information?
You can find us at www.thecityflea.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Lindsay and Nick Dewald, who are the founders of City Flea. City Flea has been around now for 3 years. What surprised you the most about it?
For one thing, we were pleasantly surprised by the immediate success. Obviously, we sort of slowly developed a pretty good following just on social media and things like that. And so it's getting easier and easier to motivate people to come out each month. But I think because the city was hungry for new and interesting things, from our first event, we had a great crowd come out and support the vendors. That's been our probably most pleasant surprise.
And I guess supporting the vendors is important because they need to sell some goods in order to keep coming back.
I think, you know, especially now that we're at Washington Park, a lot of people are just enjoying the atmosphere of the market and coming and, you know, grabbing lunch and then kind of hanging out of the park. But we always like to try to make sure people remember that them coming to the markets and actually supporting these vendors is really critical to the vendors continuing to do what they do and these events continuing to happen. If vendors aren't selling things, which so far they have been, mm-hmm. they're not going to come back, and the events just aren't going to be as successful. And so we always like to supporting these local vendors.
Lindsay, you and Nick have lived in Brooklyn. You've lived in Chicago. You guys are young professionals. Now you've moved back to the Queen City. What else would you like to see occur here in Cincinnati to really create that kind of vibrancy, that attraction that will cause young professionals want to stay here and grow families here in Cincinnati?
Well, as of now, I think Cincinnati is definitely on the right track. There's so much going on. There continues to be restaurants and shops popping up in downtown and over the Rhine areas. I think a key component of kind of making the downtown area more vibrant is actually having people live in the area, which seems to be happening more and more. People are feeling more comfortable with the neighborhoods as more businesses pop up in them. So I think we're definitely on the right track. As more people start to kind of fall in love with that urban lifestyle, I think we'll see more people start families in the city and kind of shift their lifestyle to that way.
Yeah, I don't think there's any one answer. I mean, you know, we started a flea market, but I don't think we have this list of other things that the city is waiting for. And I think in general, what Cincinnati needs to continue to do is just slowly change the mindset back to a more urban mm-hmm. train of thought, in which it seems to be happening. I mean, there's no available housing right now and over the Rhine. So, I mean, people are waiting to get down there, and those are the people that are going to come up with their own idea for what is going to add to the city.
I know, Lindsay, your flea market occurs once a month. What do you think, though, in terms of the next few years? How do you see the flea market concept growing or changing?
I think for us, we would love to see it happen every week year round. That's, you know, way down the road. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think the next step for us is year round. We currently run from May to December, so we have 4 months of the year off. So I think our next growth will happen by just occurring every month throughout the year.
And if you are a vendor looking to expand your business, and they may want to participate, they can go onto your website and apply?
Correct.
We sort of apply in waves. So right now we're closed for until the end of September. Then some of our later events people will be able to apply for, but all the information is available at our website.
And that is?
TheCityFlea.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Well, Crystal, this summer we've had some good news for taxpayers, at least Ohio taxpayers.
Including small businesses that run their operations here in Ohio.
Right. And really it's been mixed news, some good and some bad, depending on your perspective and where you sit. But for all income taxpayers, individual income taxpayers in the state of Ohio, there's a tax rate cut, which for 2013 is 8.5% retroactive to the beginning of the year. So that's some good news.
That is. The governor of Ohio, John Kasich, signed on June 30th a $62 billion two-year spending plan that did include the individual tax cut that you mentioned, Tom. And the governor had originally wanted a higher tax cut for individuals. But remember, he wanted to pay for that by including a brand new tax on certain types of items, services, for example, in the state of Ohio. Clearly, that was met with harsh criticism. And both of the Senate, the Ohio Senate and the Ohio House of Representatives rejected that. So they had to settle on a lower tax cut.
But there was a nice provision that was modified but left in to some degree, and that was the provision that a pass-through business, a small business that pays tax as an S-corporation or a partnership or a proprietorship, can exclude up to $125,000 of their business income from Ohio income tax. So that'll save about $7,000 for people who get to exclude that full amount.
Now, having said that, very much of an advocate for small businesses in terms of leveling the playing field in Ohio in terms of income tax, because as you may know, in the state of Ohio, corporations, some of the biggest corporations that are taxed as C corporations, generally pay no income tax to the state of Ohio. However, pass-through entities, for example, LLCs, partnerships, S corporations, people who are the small businesses here in the state, which clearly represent the vast number of businesses, they have been paying income tax on their business profits at the very same rate as an individual income tax, effectively not getting any benefit as the major corporations do. So I certainly am happy that this legislation's got through. It's clearly still not a fair level playing field, though.
So I assume with all these tax cuts, the state is probably spending less money in the next 2 years than the last two, right?
I don't think so.
No, of course not. Besides those tax cuts, there's also some tax increases. There's an increase in the sales tax rate. That's a big part of that.
Yes, the sales tax rate is currently 5.5%, excluding any county add-on at the state level. It's being increased to 5.75%.
Right. So it's a quarter point increase in the sales tax rate for everything that's now subject to sales tax. The other big provision to save the state money, they have currently what's called a property tax rollback. They have a series of these, but a combined amount that can be as much as 12.5% of a tax levy is funded by the state. And under this new budget bill, for future levies, for new levies, or increases in levies, that 12.5% won't apply. So either for the levy recipient to get the same amount of money, the taxpayers will have to pay 12.5% more on a new levy. Renewal will still get the 12.5%. So it's rather confusing, but in the long run, the state is subsidizing a lot less in terms of property tax.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, during the summer, many couples get married, June, July, August. There are many weddings. One thing that people don't think about when they get married is the financial situation of combining both spouses' incomes.
Well, the old adage is two can live cheaper than one, right? But sometimes two pay more income tax than each of the ones living apart and not being married.
And who wants to talk about taxes as you're planning your wedding receptions and honeymoon? But certainly that is a discussion. The money talk is something that's critical before you've said I do. If you've already said I do, you still should talk about it as well.
And you and I both know that we do work with people sometimes who like to plan things, including planning what their tax situation will be after they get married. And it is an important step because it no doubt will change. Some people will pay more taxes and some people will pay less. It depends in part upon your relative incomes relative to each other.
Marriage is a partnership, and as such, it really should be treated that way in all respects. So it's critical that you sit down with your spouse. You talk about things like how much debt are you bringing into this marriage? How much income do we have? And you need to think about that in terms of after tax. What you were paying and having withheld in your paychecks when you were single may not be enough, especially if you both are high earner incomes. The reality of it is there are so many things, including taxes, but that's not the only thing that you need to think about. You really need to start considering what your financial needs are going to be. How much money do you have coming into the house? How much is going out? Really separate wants versus needs as well. Needs are something you have to pay for every month. Wants are something that you may like to have if you've got extra money.
Well, and you have to have a plan. You know, you have to be able to, people hate to use this word budget, but you have to have a budget of some type so that you know what you're planning for. Make sure you have what we call an emergency fund so that if something does happen to one of you and your income goes down or goes away, you'll have, at least in the short term, enough funds to continue your lifestyle.
They also say, Tom, to your point of if those sayings are true, opposites attract. So it's very likely that one of you is a saver and the other one is a spender. You need to talk about that and come to terms with when is it okay to go out and spend our money? What type of purchases require both spouses to agree on a purchase?
And you also have to look at your fringe benefits, assuming you're both working. Look at the fringe benefits that each of you get and make intelligent choices about which ones you'll choose. You know, you may be better off going on your spouse's health plan than using your own at your employer, depending on what the costs and what the benefits are.
And I know when you're young and you get married in your early 20s, for example, or even your early 30s, retirement seems like a lifetime away. But certainly take advantage of the employer-provided retirement programs at least to the extent that the employer matches your contributions in a 401k plan, for example. Because if you're not doing that, you are absolutely leaving money on the table. You're saying no thank you to money that you could otherwise have that would be beneficial to you.
Well, and another bit of advice I think is that both people in the relationship should share financial responsibility. It shouldn't be just one person, because something may happen to that one person. It's important that you're both involved. One can do more of the detail work if they want to, but you should both be knowledgeable about the financial status.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Beth Nowak. Beth has created an organization, and she's the founder of a company called Giving Families. And Beth, I know Giving Families and yourself was just recognized as the best social entrepreneur in a competition that was involving women-led businesses. Congratulations for that. So Giving Families is about helping parents teach their children how to be good people and do good things. How did you come up with this business model?
Well, while teaching kindergarten for 12 years, I noticed that my children were extremely giving. They were always offering to help in any way possible, and wanted to create an environment where parents could expose their children to different opportunities to try to help others, because the feelings we get from helping others really improve our mental health and make us feel more confident about ourselves.
Did you find that, you know, as a kindergarten teacher, when you got these kids, were they already good at helping people, or does it vary with the kids?
No, mostly every child wants to help. If you ask any young child what they want to be when they grow up, they'll always answer with being a doctor or a fireman or a teacher, because they see those people as helpers and they want to help too. But unfortunately, as children get older, they become a little bit more selfish and tend to not be so helpful.
What causes a young child who really is very helpful, then all of a sudden they grow up and things change and life becomes busy? Is that why they become less compassionate and empathetic?
I think it's because as parents and as teachers, we're maybe not doing enough to recognize the things that they're already doing, or to praise them, but then also to create opportunities for them to be helpful. Whenever I had the opportunity, I would always encourage children or praise them for helping one another, but then try to create opportunities where they could help each other, whether it was tying shoes, zipping coats, or running something to the office. And children never missed an opportunity to try to be helpful.
How does Giving Families help generate those kinds of feelings for the families that you work with?
Everybody knows that it feels good to do good, and which is why around 117 million families donate to charity each year. The problem is that traditional methods of giving, like putting a check in the mail, make it impossible for parents to include their children in the giving process. So if parents could just include their children in their donation efforts, then children could experience the good feelings that come from doing good.
Sometimes it's just hard to know where you can include your children and what resources and opportunities are out there to do that.
Absolutely. And that's why Giving Families I was inspired to create Giving Families, was because parents are very busy. There are a lot of opportunities, but it really just boils down to education and trying to teach children at an early age that A, what they're doing and being helpful is good, but B, presenting them with opportunities to be helpful. So the site itself works from an educational standpoint. It introduces children to 5 different nonprofits each month. You can log on, review the 5 different options, what causes they're supporting, and then decide which causes you want to financially support. And each month, new charities are featured. And so it kind of becomes a for the people, by the people scenario, because families suggest the nonprofits and vote on them to determine which nonprofits will fundraise the following month.
We're also teaching them a little bit about finance, because they have to realize they can only give away so much money, and they have to make choices about who they give it to.
Absolutely. The give, save, spend philosophy is pretty popular among parents right now, and financial literacy skills are something that children need to learn at a very young age. So we have merchandise on the site that's available that helps support the give, save, spend philosophy, and then gives the children an outlet to actually give once they've allocated their money as such.
If folks listening today would like to learn more about Giving Families, check out the website. What is the website address?
It's givingfamilies.com, and you can also check us out on Facebook.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Beth Nowak. Beth is the founder and CEO of Giving Families. And Beth, Giving Families is an organization that helps families help their children do good things and as a family unit. Why should parents be including their children in the donation process?
We spend so much money on education and try to expose our children to the world. We involve them in sports. We teach them how to play musical instruments or foreign languages, really because we just want to teach them what the world has to offer. But in order to really develop compassion and empathy, children need to understand that there are causes in the world that need help and that there is an opportunity for them to help, even if it's just a little bit. When children receive allowance money or birthday money, to set aside a little portion of that to give and support those nonprofits, a little bit goes a long way, especially when there are several children that are doing the same thing, creates that community environment. And when you think about the feelings that you get from doing good, why wouldn't we want to include our children in as many opportunities as possible so that they too can feel those good feelings? We have the opportunity to mold and shape our children while they're young and to teach them that it is our responsibility to take action in the world. And by doing it at an early age, it really will set them up for a lifetime of trying to be helpful.
How does it really work then? Do they go to your website to select a charity?
Yep. Families go to the website, they create a family account, and then we feature five nonprofits each month. They fall into five different categories children would be interested in: help the animals, help the ailing, help the people, help the earth, and a featured category that relates to current events or natural disasters. Children read the brief descriptions that are given to them in a way that they'll understand the need and then can pick and choose which ones they want to donate to. You purchase credits and they reside in your account, and they can stay there until you decide to use all of them. You don't have to use them up all at once. One of the most popular things right now is for children to donate for their birthdays. So we just had a child decided to support the SPCA for her birthday, and instead of asking for toys, asked for bags of dog food and dog toys and took them down to the SPCA and really got to see what the impact of her donation was. We had another child donated gifts to the Ronald McDonald House, but really taking an opportunity to turn an event that would otherwise be very self-centered and turn it into a way to help make a difference.
What impact do you really want to make in terms of how big this can get?
That question is so difficult because it really is limitless. Of course, it starts with children and helping them develop that compassion and empathy that they will grow into as adults. But the financial literacy piece is huge. But on the back end, it's helping all of these nonprofits that are the ones that are making a difference in our world. And these are people that have devoted their lives to helping different causes, and they really deserve the recognition and the extra support. And so if we can combine the two and teach children and help the nonprofits, I think it's a win-win.
It absolutely is. And you can just hear the passion in your voice, Beth. Good luck to that. And thank you for everything you're doing. If folks would like to learn more about Giving Families, the website is?
GivingFamilies.com. And you can also check out our Facebook page for more ideas on ways your family can give together.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Tom and Chris Candelresi. Tom, I know you did not always start out in the college planning world, nor you, Chris. You're a professional golfer. And Tom, you have been an executive and have worked for different companies. What generated this whole idea, Start Plan the Way Foundation, which is a nonprofit that helps people with college planning, financial education, and so forth?
I opened up a financial services business back in 2009. Chris had some time available during that period, and I talked him into joining me. And part of the things that we did was just talk to families about financial setting and getting their house in order for college. We're pretty successful at that, but we just weren't getting in front of enough people. Being a for-profit company, schools were reluctant to let us in. So I went and talked to the Department of Education up in Columbus and said, what can we do? And his recommendation was become a nonprofit. So you said your website has to end in ORG. He said start teaching financial literacy to 6th and 7th graders, start down the junior high. We made the necessary changes, and now we're able to get into schools, churches a lot easier now. So I think we're having a better impact on the number of students and families we get in front of. And that was our goal, to get in front of more people.
Well, let's talk about the impact, because Chris, you and I met recently just talking about what you're doing. And what impact are you having? What kind of results are you seeing?
Well, we've been tracking our numbers, and we've been working a lot with Cincinnati Public Schools this year. We've probably put about 2,000 students between the grades of 7 through 12 through our program. We've worked with probably about 20 different school districts here in the area. And ultimately, our goal is to help provide our resources and programs to all the middle school and high school students in the Cincinnati area as we begin to expand outward.
Well, when a student goes through your program, what do you want them to come out of the program with?
Ultimately, our goal is to help them develop a plan. I think that was a big reason why we set up the name of our foundation in such a way. A plan for creating themselves for what their steps they need to do to get to college of their choice that's the best fit for them, and as well as a plan for how they're going to reach their career goals.
So you actually combine both of those efforts into, you call it your program. And the program that we discussed is something called Reality City. How does that work?
It's been a tremendous program. And we actually took the concept from a women's education organization from Indiana. We've modified it like many other organizations have to make it their own. The impact that we have with that as far as reaching out to the community is providing the students with an opportunity to get some hands-on experience. They think about a career that they envision having in the future. They're assigned a salary associated with that career, broken down to a monthly salary. And from there, they have to visit different stations and make some critical decisions as far as the different kind of lifestyle choices that they're going to face in the future as far as paying for different expenses and wants and needs like that.
So it actually allows them to have something tangible instead of just reading in a book or somebody lecturing to them. They're actually going through and have activities that reflect reality.
Absolutely. And what I'm finding is a lot of times that the students, they aren't getting enough of the, especially the financial literacy pieces in schools. And this is a great opportunity for them to get some basic fundamentals and establish that groundwork as far as learning about saving and investing, budgeting, things like that.
If people listening today would like to learn more about Plan the Way for Foundation, what you're doing, what you're up to, get involved, how can they reach you?
Well, our website is www.ptwfoundation.org, or they can call us at 513-753-1280.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Tom and Chris Candelarisi. They are the founders of Plan the Way Foundation, which is a not-for-profit organization that helps students and families plan. You help them plan for college. What are some of the steps you have them make in order to plan for college?
We invite the parents and students to come to different workshops and programs to just get the basic understanding of the information. I think the process has changed so much over the last 10 to 20 years that even the parents who've recently gone to school, have students in middle school, aren't aware of all the opportunities and challenges that they present. So we educate them through our workshops and programs. We then invite them in for a one-on-one consultation where we'll review their financial information. Being college planning advisors, that's a specialty niche. So even though a lot of people have financial planners, the strategies involved in college planning are much different, and they have a tremendous impact, or could have a tremendous impact, on financial aid eligibility and planning for the future as well. So we'll sit down with them, review their one-on-one situation, and talk with them about different options they have to save and pay for school.
I find that you get a lot of information from colleges, which is at least, to put it politely, tainted, I guess, in terms of what you can really expect to get in terms of financial aid.
Sure.
But there's not a lot of information out there from a more objective source like yours.
Absolutely.
It's like going to the IRS to fill out your tax return. They'll do it, but they're not going to give you all the benefit of the doubt on everything.
And that's where you have to be very careful, you know, looking at your student award letters, your financial aid award letters, on understanding how those are awarded, looking at your different options that you have. I think the first step that we try to stress with families is taking a look and trying to lower their expected family contribution, that EFC, as low as they legally can. And then from there, looking at the, like I said, the different options on the strategies involved in reducing that amount, maximizing aid for financial aid, scholarships, grants, and things like that, and really helping them understand how that process works.
But what I really find lacking in our school systems is what you all are offering in terms of at an earlier age, maybe 7th grade, 8th grade, really assessing a child's skills, their passions, their dreams, and helping them, not that they have to make a life decision at that age, but certainly positioning them for success as they go forward. What does it take to get these scholarships? What does it take to get these award letters?
And we try to bring that to the parents' attention, that your student needs to do this. It seems like every student is getting 3.5s and 4.0s, and so that doesn't set you apart from anyone else now. So we try to give them some guidance on what additionally you need to do to set yourself up to be successful.
Yeah, and one of the big things that we're implementing with the programs moving forward is really gaining some opportunities for these kids to get work experience. I've had several conversations with administrators in middle school, high school, and college, and that seems to be a recurring theme. So like my father was just saying, you know, grades are going to be what they are. There's very selective people, you know, maintaining a 4.0 or greater. But what is it going to be that's going to separate you from the rest of them? And those are going to be those real work experiences that speak to your career interests.
The other question is, when you are ready to write the check, what bucket of money do you take it from? Do you take one 529 plans? Do you pay for it out of your pocket? Do you take it from unified gift to minor types of accounts? So I think that's another question mark that people just don't know.
Sure.
And that's what we do with the one-on-one consultation. You know, we ask for their financial history and where they stand now and what buckets they do have.
Our website, you can find more information at www.ptwfoundation.org. You can email us at info@ptwfoundation.org or call us at 513-753-1290.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guests today are April Vogt and Jen Adams, and these two ladies have created a pretty awesome business, I think, called the Proficient Assistant. So, Jen, let's talk about that. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, April and I, we've been childhood friends. We both have three children, and I think that by learning through our own families, raising our own children, and working, have realized that there's a real need for people out there to juggle everything, and they need some help.
And when you say help, what kind of help do you give them? What are some of the services that you offer?
We do anything from a simple repurpose to a full-scale redesign for them.
What's that mean, a repurpose?
We could take existing pieces of furniture in their house and reorganize, you know, in order to stay within a budget, and repurpose that piece of furniture for another use. And then we can go full scale and do add new furniture, add paint, decorating.
What about organization? Do you help people come in and say they've had kids who now have grown up and all the toys are still sitting in the toy closet?
Absolutely. I think what's so unique about our business, I actually am an interior designer myself. April is a hairstylist, so we obviously both have a great design sense. Majority of our jobs are organization jobs, but what we love to do is not only organize playrooms, kitchens, home offices, garages, and basements, but then we can also design those rooms, which really puts the finishing touch on. And usually we can do it for not a lot of money. I mean, we can simply repaint the room and mm-hmm. it transforms the
sure.
room.
Just change up the curtains.
Yeah,
right.
Hang the art, the existing art that they already have. That's an example of repurposing. So once you organize and then you make the room complete, it really makes people happy.
And this is the right time of the year, isn't it, mm-hmm. to really get into that? People have kind of pushed the winter behind them, are really looking at some fresh opportunities. Mm-hmm. How do you go about marketing your services?
We tend to do a majority of our advertising with House Trends magazine, which has been very successful for us. Every time we have a new magazine that goes out, we are flooded with calls. And actually, this spring has been very overwhelming and productive, and we're
That's
really
great.
Looking forward to it.
Who is the typical client, somebody that you can really go in and help?
I have to say, I think it's probably double income families. It's when, you know, they both work, they're overwhelmed with soccer practices and homework. And as you said before, when it comes to organization, everybody does it. You have piles in your home and you turn a blind eye to it because it's something that you not only don't want to do, but you don't have the time. We go in and we can knock it out in half a day, and it changes their lives. They are so relieved when we're finished and so grateful.
It's just that thing hanging over their heads, isn't it?
Yes.
Correct.
And I do think it is easier for somebody who's not so attached to items to have more of a
flexibility.
Yeah, being able to help people maybe let go of things that really are taking up too much room in their home and they don't need any more.
So if folks listening would like to learn more, like to get in touch with you, what's your contact information?
We have a website. It's www.theproficientassistant.com.
513-604-1707.
Thank you, ladies, so much. And thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guests today are Jen Adams and April Vogt, and these two ladies have created a business that I think is really wonderful, especially for busy families and very personally busy moms who may be working as well as juggling multiple things in their lives. And it's called the Proficient Assistant. Mm-hmm. And in addition to going in and helping people just organize rooms, you also do other things as well, including interior design work. Mm-hmm. But do you also help them organize their lives just more in general?
Absolutely.
And how do you do that?
We go in and meet with the client. We usually do a 30-minute consultation to assess what their needs are and what we can do to help them get set up and moving along.
Could this even be things that possibly they wouldn't even think that they need? For example, if there's certain issues that have to be taken care of every week, every month.
Absolutely. I mean, that can happen from home organization to also errand running. If somebody has the
dogs, cats.
Yeah, absolutely. We can do anything like that. We can
help with
run
a party,
grocery shop.
Help with planning a party.
Are you finding that people are a little more open to outsourcing things that maybe typically wouldn't have been considered something that you would otherwise outsource?
I think this is such a great service for them that they don't mind paying for the help because it really does set them up for running more efficiently through their household.
What about employers who maybe have busy employees? If you could help the employee from their family side, then maybe they could be more productive.
Absolutely.
In their business.
An ideal situation would be we go in and we take somebody's car and get a car wash, and they have an anniversary coming up and we go purchase the present and have it wrapped. And I mean, we could do 15 errands during a workday and then it's done.
They get to go home and enjoy their family time.
Exactly. And again, your business has been around for how long?
About a year and a half.
You started this business, we weren't quite in the depth of the recession, but certainly we were just coming out of the recession. Mm-hmm. So have you found that it's been a struggle getting the business up and going?
Well, we definitely did our research on who we needed to market to and who would be our best resource. House Trends magazine has been a godsend for us. They are a bi-monthly publication that is catered to
high-end, affluent neighborhoods.
Yes. And bottom line, it sounds to me like what you guys have done is you've really narrowed and focused your marketing efforts. So
Absolutely.
Effectively, instead of trying to be all things to all people, mm-hmm. you've really narrowed your focus and used your limited resources, I would assume, as a startup company, pretty wisely in terms of targeting your specific audience.
Absolutely. Exactly. And yeah. I do feel like business is definitely picking up, not only from advertising, but because of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's improving on a weekly basis, which
and
is great.
Word of mouth also has been very good.
Well, again, before we go, your contact information is?
We have a great website at www.theproficientassistant.com, and our phone number is 513-604-1707.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.